What's the best piece of marketing advice that you've ever received? And do you still follow it today?
Best piece of, I will tell you what that piece of marketing advice is.
I was hoping that you wouldn't hold on to it.
You know, those who know me know I can be strong-willed and I will voice my opinion. I will listen.
I like to call it perspectives. Consistent. I call it consistent.
Thank you. So I was being consistent with a manager of mine. And
honey, I'm going to so use that. I was not being belligerent. I was being consistent with you. What's up, everyone? It's Eric Vessels with Tactiful. Welcome back to another episode of Tactiful Tuesdays. And today I'm really thrilled to have Joanne Gore on the podcast. Joanne is a B2B marketing expert, print evangelist, and the president of Joanne Gore Communications. Decades of experience helping print and graphic companies generate demand, grow their business. She's a powerhouse, really, when it comes to making print marketing work in the digital age. We can't wait to dive into her insights on the future of printing, market trends, and how businesses can stand out. Joanne, welcome to the show. Finally,
we made it work. And even that was sketchy. So I am super thrilled to be here. Glad that the tech is working. We're here. Your smiling face.
Life is good. We were talking before we started recording how difficult it's been to be on. So we're episode 18.
Lucky 18.
I sometimes completely space where I'm at, but I looked it up right before because I wanted to know. And I just want to say we're on episode 18, but you were one of the very first people that I scheduled to do a shoot with. It's just like, we got to cancel. And then I had to cancel. And then we didn't make it. Finally, we're here and we're talking. I'm really, really happy. And for people that don't know, and we'll probably get into this later, go in all kinds of different directions, but Joanne predates me really being working with Tactful, was on the team when I was still at What They Think, and is our marketing subject matter expert and helps us with a lot of our internal marketing, helps us train when we're training clients on marketing issues, and yeah, just a really valuable part of the team. So I want to get into this by, you've been a really strong advocate for print as part of an omni-channel marketing strategy. What's a misconception out there about print marketing that you wish more people understood?
Well, I don't want to use the D word because it's been used.
Please
to
don't.
D. So
pet peeve
we're going to put that one aside.
It's like saying, don't think of an elephant, right? When you say it, like immediately everybody.
Yeah. So let's just skip that. Even though that's always the first topic of conversation. It's really, sorry, I spaced out for a second.
Hey,
what was the question?
That happens to me. Happens to me all the time.
Yeah, wait.
I completely understand. That's like how I roll. That's why this is so much fun. I guess what I'm asking is, as an advocate of print being in the marketing mix, as you
yes.
are, right?
Yes. What are the common, right, got it. I'm back on track.
Yeah.
What are the common objections and hurdles that have to be overcome?
Just misconception, right?
So cost is a big one, and the whole sustainability talk track. Like, those are the two big hurdles. It's one of the reasons I'm seeing a lot more printers focus on their sustainability story. And I think you and I had a conversation back at one of the trade shows around that sustainability story, in the sense mm-hmm. that some are just doing it from a marketing perspective.
Sure.
Because they recognize that, yes, it's important to share what that is. Yes. And at the bare minimum, that's what you should be doing. What's your sustainability practice? But then there are those companies that take it up a level, and really that whole concept of sustainability and really helping the planet, not hurting the planet, they make that part of their spirit, their culture.
The core values.
Tree, root tree comes to mind.
Absolutely.
They're definitely up there. I know Sunprint, one of our clients, they truly put their money where their mouth is. Like, they're very focused on sustainability efforts. What's another one? There are packaging companies out there that, it's not even so much about the materials of it being used. It's going right back to the beginning when the project is being created. If sustainability matters to the brand, never mind the printer, if sustainability really matters to the brand and they're not doing it lip service, then they're going to want to have conversations with the manufacturer, in this case, their print manufacturer, as to what their sustainability policies are, in the same way that they're going to want to have that conversation with their product manufacturer, their packaging manufacturer, whatever they are producing, whether they're doing it themselves or having somebody do it for them. If sustainability truly matters to the brand and truly matters to that brand's customers, then it rolls all the way up to the top.
But it's, sustainability is more holistic than just, is the paper recyclable? Is it FSC? The way that I'm viewing sustainability, because there's a sustainability aspect in digital as well, right? When I time out ChatGPT because it's using up too much computing power and it makes me wait for 5 minutes or whatever, like there's an energy cost there. Like there's an environmental impact both ways. So I think the takeaway is like for us to start talking more holistically and come from a place, really be on offense more than be on defense, right? Like I advocate never saying, you know, print is not dead. How does print fit into what it is you want to accomplish? And then concede the digital too. It's no big deal, right? Like just concede that and be a part of that mix.
So you hit the nail on the head. So a lot of what I do and what I preach, I think everybody knows that I'm on a personal mission to help the print industry sell more print.
Yep.
As a whole, you know, I say our business helps your business do more business.
Right.
I just happen to have a soft spot for the print industry. I grew up in the print, like, you know, I studied that. That's what I've done. So for me, I know the players, I know the people, I've seen people's career paths. Like it just holds that soft spot. So the good news is it makes it really easy for me to have those conversations with the brands and the consumers of the brands in a kind of roundabout way and educate the printers. These are the conversations you need to be having. Nobody wants to talk about how it's being manufactured. They just want to know, yes, you've got, you know, if we were talking about sustainability, here's our sustainability policy. Yes, we can integrate digital. We can cleanse your data for you. And we could also add the value added layer of print where it makes sense. Whether it's a direct mail piece, whether it's lumpy mail, whether it's a physical sign in a store, whether it's a itty constructed piece at a point of sale.
What's lumpy mail?
I like to call, some people call it dimensional mail. I think that's the official term, is dimensional mail, meaning it's typically in an oversized envelope, but it's not flat. There's some, you want to open it up, it might come in a box. It might be in a bubble envelope and there's clearly something in the package. It's not just a brochure.
Yeah, I got you. When you said that, I immediately thought of like the oversized white poly envelopes that you get from Amazon, because that's kind of lumpy.
Yeah, that's lumpy mail.
I wanted to get into this area. And so you've given me a really good segue, right? Talking about coming up in print and why there's a soft spot in your heart. Talk to me about how you share a bit of that history. And I know you wrote a book about it. Definitely recommend everyone. I've got my signed copy. I recommend everyone checking out that. Will really, if you want to dive deep into Joanne's story, definitely pick up the book and read it. But give us a little bit of just a cliff notes of like how you came up and got to where you are being an advocate for print in the marketing mix.
Thank you. I mean, the title of the book says it all, Thriving in Chaos, because the story I'm about to tell you, I always say, like, are you sure you want to hear it? You might want to buckle up for it. But bottom line is I went to school to be a graphic designer. And that's what I studied. That's how I graduated college. Once I graduated, I moved from Montreal to Toronto to work for a printer that had a graphic design studio as part of it, doing all of the typesetting, layout, design. And we're going old school. Like there was no computers, there was no internet. We're talking darkroom, stat machine, Rubylith, typesetting. I was one of a handful of bilingual, and when I say bilingual, I mean French, English, typesetters in Toronto when I moved here in the mid-80s.
No shame, man.
And there you go. So done school, I'm here. Hey world, I'm here in Toronto working for a designer. I don't know anything. It's just, you know, if work comes up, find out that I'm one of a handful of typesetters, I was able to keep myself very, very, very busy. And back in those days, you know, we have it so easy today. You were limited by the number of font disks you could use at one time. And each disk held four versions. So you would have regular, italic, bold, and bold italic of whatever your font was. If you were lucky and you got to work on a machine with four disks, it means you got to work with 16 fonts at a time. So long story short, I cut my teeth as a designer in the print industry. They eventually ended up selling out to an agency. I worked for a quick copy printing. I cut my teeth in like the fast food of print, as well as sort of the more sort of corporate side of it. I have fast forward to the late 80s, and I was offered a role at a software company managing all of their print production globally. So it was an interesting segue. And again, cool, sounds interesting. What do I know? I go work for this company. The company was Delrina. Most people do not remember the name unless they're Canadian. But if you remember the product that made it possible to fax from your computer, the very first product that allowed you, it was called WinFax. So that was the software that we developed. I could even, for the audience, if you really want a sneak peek, if you look up there, you see there's a tactical sign in the background, but you'll see some boxes of software in the background, and that's all of the software from back then in those days. So you just got a sneak peek at my inspiration behind me. I'll lower that.
I've been on so many calls with you. I've always wanted to see top of shelf, to see what.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
That's so cool. So
from there, I got into corporate marketing. And I didn't realize that that's what I was doing, but that's what happened. And I basically spent the next 30 years as a corporate marketer, so primarily working for software companies. Okay. So I've always been in that B2B world, marketed to all of the core B2B verticals, finance, healthcare, government, military, utilities like telco, you name it. I've marketed to it. So I've learned over the years how the buyer makes buying decisions, what they look for, who they want to talk to, when they want to talk to them. And I've always kind of I've had to pay attention to that. So it started off as print production manager and going around the world and setting the standards for, you know, your proof sheet, your signed proof sheet, and making sure everybody knows what to look for, what typically goes out of register, all of that. That's all set up. And remember, back then, it wasn't just a box. It was like a box, and there was a quick start guide, and then there was the manual, and then there were the diskettes and the labels and the business reply cards. And it was paper. Print. It was all print. It was amazing. Those were definitely a world of fun, a world of hell, but a world of fun. So fast forward throughout my career, not only did I work for companies that focused on securing your DNS or your mail streams, but I also worked for companies that targeted the print industry, like DST Output. So you're talking about highly transactional. That led me down the path of becoming part of the Explore Association, which sadly,
I saw the news
is shuttering.
Yeah. 32?
So sad. It's sad.
Change can be uncomfortable.
The good news is we'll still all be at Printing United in a slightly different format this year, doing sessions and whatnot. But so that's how I got into the transactional world. Every company that I've worked at throughout my corporate career at some point in time went through a merger and an acquisition. Either the company got acquired or we were the acquiring company. So I've lived that life of you see HR walking down the hall with a manila envelopes, you know, someone's getting laid off. Like you learn to spot the signs. I talk about this in the book, spotting the signs, right? What do you do? How can you prepare yourself for that inevitable moment? What do you look for? How to not take it personally? Like this is business. You're a number on a page. Nobody cares. That happened to me at DST. So I ended up at I started Joanne Gore version one as a freelancer offering my marketing services as a what now would be considered a fractional marketer. But there's only so many hours in the day. but I was doing very well. And the way I used to get work was through LinkedIn. Now, again, we're going back easily 20 years.
Yeah.
And I would look for companies who were hiring senior marketers. And I would reach out to them and say, I am a senior marketer. I can come in because I know it's going to take you 3 to 6 months to fill that role for the right person. But shit still needs to get done. I can say shit on this podcast, right?
Sure.
Shit. Stuff still needs to get done.
Damn it. I'll allow it. I'll allow it. Well, you know, what's interesting is I think we just found out, like, you predate me by, what, 3 years on LinkedIn? And I thought I like, 07 was pretty early adopting.
No, I think I'm 04. I'm pretty sure I'm 04.
Yeah, that's what you said on your webinar. So speaking of change and dealing with change and spotting the signs, AI, man, and the automation that's sort of reshaping not only the printing industry, but how we market. How do you see print evolving to stay relevant, to continue to stay relevant in a digital first world? Obviously, we've already established that that's kind of a moot question, but what do you see AI doing both to marketing going forward?
So first things first is you have to be willing to embrace it and not be scared of it. Anybody who's scared of it is just going to fall. I have been playing with AI probably since ChatGPT-3. So I think we all kind of really started playing with it at around the same time, about 2 years ago now, give or take.
Sounds about right.
And I was already seeing some of the leaders quickly moving up to the top and what it took. So I was just soaking up the information. From then till now, there's been such an explosion of information on how to. I feel already a little bit left behind in some areas. I can't even imagine the folks who are only just starting to think, should I use AI? The shorter answer is hell yes. Like, you should. There is no reason not to be using it in some shape or form.
If you're not using AI right now, you are definitely behind. But I would caveat that by saying, not behind in a race kind of way, like not in a, but just behind in, like, people are just sort of ahead of you in terms of how to utilize it. I don't think there's any point at which you can't get in and learn and have it be very valuable, right? Because here's the thing. With the pace of change in technology, just technology, I'm not even talking AI. But then on top of that, the pace of change we're seeing in the AI space, we're always going to be behind. Like, it's just a constant state of being behind. So don't worry so much, because I feel like it's a...
Yeah, no, exactly. My point is, you know, there's that expression, you know, the best time to start was yesterday and the next best time is now. Now, like, start now.
But, yeah.
So if you go back, let's say a year and a half, I could see what was going on. I've lived in that tech world long enough. I don't need to understand the tech to see what's going to happen with it. And I've said to myself, every single software company that exists on the planet today, even if they were this close to shuttering bankruptcy, has been given a lifeline. Because now they have an opportunity to offer an AI-enhanced version of some sort, whatever that looks like. So if you are a software company and not figuring out, like, you should be looking at ways not just to use AI from a business perspective and use it to, from everything from planning your day to coming up with call scripts to identifying prospects. Like, it's the basic stuff to even saying, okay, here's what I need to do. What should I do next? Like, it can help you in so many ways. As long as you're not afraid to ask it questions, it'll get you where you need to go if you have an idea of where you want to go, right?
Yeah, or even, I find even if I don't have an idea of where I want to go, where should I be going with this? And AI will help me sort of narrow that down, and I'll pick one. The big key for me, the big thing that has got AI utilization way up was learning how to train my own GPT.
Yes.
It's not hard. Reach out to me or reach out to Joe if you haven't done it, because I think we've both probably done it. I've got a GPT called Eric's Voice, and it's got multiple LinkedIn posts, multiple emails of my writing and my style of communication. And I've just loaded it up, and I continue to load it up with source material so that it can continue to learn how to talk like me, because I think that's one of the biggest drawbacks is like, oh, we can tell that's AI dribble, right?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of times you're not going to be able to tell the difference between, you know, something. And I always recommend too, like, don't just blindly copy and paste. Don't be an idiot. Read it and be an
editor. You have to actually read it. And
be an editor.
Yeah. And then tell it. What I like to do is when I'm done, I feed it the final piece.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of people forget to do. I feed it right. I'm like, okay, thank you for all your help. Here's the final version. Study it so you know better for next time. Look at the changes that I made.
Peter, like Kevin, Kevin always says please and thank you.
Oh yeah, I'm so polite to my chat.
The robot. I don't want to anger the robot.
It's the Canadian in me. I'm saying please all the time. I can't help it. But sometimes I get mad at it and I shout like in all caps and I'm like, you're not listening to me. I don't know where you're getting this information. Stop. Here's what I want you to do. Do it now. Like sometimes you have to treat it like a child.
Like, I'm training a puppy right now, and it's almost exactly like that. I remember typing in ChatGPT yesterday after multiple failed attempts at something. I was like, you're really frustrating me right now. Like, the first version you did is perfect, except for this. Stop recreating all the stuff. Just recreate this.
Yeah. So when that happens to me, I will go to Perplexity, and it will say, Perplexity, this is what I want ChatGPT to do. Here's what it keeps doing. Give me the prompt so it gives me what I want. And then I get Perplexity to create the prompt. And then I go back and feed it into ChatGPT.
You're angling the robot overlords against one another, man. You're winning. I love it.
I'm trying. So going back to whatever question we were talking about, at some point I was always in the tech space. I was always spotting those signs. And that's what we talk about in the book. And that's more importantly what I'm trying to do at GGC. Because the last place I went, which was where pulled me out of that freelance mode, right? Remember, go back. I only had so many hours in the day using LinkedIn. Hey, you need somebody? They would say, no, fine. They'd call me back 3 months later. Hey, we still haven't hired anybody. We need your help. Great. And I would sometimes stay there for a year, however long, 2 days a week with one place, 3 days a week with another.
Nice.
Fast forward. Did the exact same thing with Avanti. Nope, we need you full time. We want you full time. Great, means I'm going to have to close up shop. Closed up shop, went to work, blah, blah, blah. Next thing you know, what do you think? Rico buys out Avanti and we're back where we started. And I'm like, that's it. I'm done. I'm launching GGC. I'm working with all of the people that I've worked with. We're creating a virtual agency. There's no offices. There's no buildings. I'm in Toronto. We've got people around the world working on global accounts. And then COVID hit and everybody shut down and we were ready to go because we'd been working virtually.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. I was one of the ones that was also like, I've never worked in an office since 1999. So like I had no frame of reference for what everyone was going through. It's wild. So I did want to ask, I got a couple more questions. Then we're going to have some fun. Well, okay, hopefully this is all fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure if I've even answered any of your questions yet, but that's cool. Cause I think we just keep
in a roundabout way you do, man. That's how this goes. Cool. You know, the style, what's the best piece of marketing advice that you've ever received? And do you still follow it today?
I will tell you what that piece of marketing advice is.
I was hoping that you wouldn't hold on to it.
Those who know me know I can be strong-willed and I will voice my opinion. I will listen.
I like to call it perspectives. I call it consistent.
Thank you. So I was being consistent with a manager of mine and
I'm going to still use that. I was not being belligerent. I was being consistent with you.
And we were having this conversation and it had to do with AdWords. And I was saying, I don't want to do it. It's a waste of money. And somebody else, and then I'm going to preface this by saying this was almost 20 years ago. Okay. So, and I do not believe AdWords is a waste of money, by the way. I just think it needs to be used smart and wise the same way as any other marketing.
All forms of marketing can be wastes of money.
Yes. Including print. It all depends, right?
Including email. Yeah, you never know.
So I was having a
You were being consistent.
I was being consistent and saying, the typical sales versus marketing. Sales wants this, marketing doesn't. And then he looked at me and he said, you're right. You are dead. Emphasis on dead. What? He's like, are you willing to die on the vine for this? And I'm like, no. He goes, so let it go.
Let it go, yeah.
That was the best piece. So I was like, done. So when I sometimes it's that say it's like pick your battles, however you want to look at it. But for me, it was like, you're right. You're dead right. Emphasis on dead. And I replay that in my head sometimes multiple times a day. Just depends. Sometimes I don't hear that voice in my head for a while. But that has always stuck with me. And I don't think it's just marketing related, but it tends to come up a lot because...
Yeah, it's a business thing. And I mean, the way that it was put to me years ago in college by a senior cadre member at West Point was, is this the hill you're going to die on? Like, is this it?
Is it?
And I think I've been in situations you probably have as well where you go, right? But I've also been in situations where, yep, this is it.
Yep,
this is the place. This is the place that I'm at, that willing to die for. Great, great, super advice. All right.
Thank you.
Fun time.
Yeah.
If you could put a message on every billboard in the entire world for a single day, what would it say? You get all the space on all the billboards just for a single day. What would
breathe.
It say? Breathe. Oh, that's such a good one. Such breathe. A good one. As a practicing Buddhist and Zen student, I'm blown away at how many times I forget to breathe.
Yeah.
Right?
Just, so
there's so much that you can breathe in and then breathe out. It's like,
push.
It's such a healing modality, just breath. People, it's probably the number one thing I would argue we take for granted.
Yeah. And you know, I have another hat. I wear a lot of hats, but one of the hats I wear is in the health and wellness industry. Breath, breathing, yes. Form, diaphragm, function, posture. I swear if it wasn't for that aspect of my life, I would not be where I am today. I would be.
I love that.
I'd probably be in a straitjacket somewhere, honestly. It has truly gotten me through many, many, many high times and low times. And a lot of it just comes back with finding your center, finding your why. Just take a deep breath, close your eyes. Remember, why are you doing this? What's your why? Just focus on, you know, you can only control what you can control. And everything else, you just have to figure out how you react. And it all starts with a breath.
Man, that's such good advice. That's the number one way to sort of get back to like a centered place is to just, what I was taught by my teachers, return to the breath. Because it's, no matter what's happening in your life, whether it's chaotic, whether it's great and happy, or whether it's whatever, you know, sad, depressing, overjoyed, anxious, your breath is always there to return back to. Breathe. What a great campaign you just came up with.
Yeah.
So I know we're going to be spending some time. We're about to onboard another boot camp you'll be involved in the marketing.
Very excited.
Looking forward to that. So one takeaway for those who probably, I don't know, maybe want more information about, we didn't talk much about digital embellishments. What's a big key to marketing digital embellishments?
I think it goes even bigger. I'm pretty sure you know what I'm about to say.
Yeah.
But I say it countless times every day. In order to succeed, whether it's for yourself, for your business, for your boss, whatever it is, who do you help? How do you help? And why does it matter? And you have to be able to answer those questions. If you can't, you're wasting your time, you're wasting your money, you're wasting your resources. You won't know what works. You won't know what doesn't work. You'll get a sense, but it's kind of like you're always chasing versus sitting back and learning.
Repeat that for me again.
Who do you help?
How do you help?
How do you help?
And why does it matter? I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Where do most people get stuck related to those three things?
They look at what they do and how they do it. not who they help and how they help them. If you go to majority of websites today, the statements are going to be, we are, we do, we have.
So they get stuck right out of the gate.
Oh, right out of the gate. Right out of the gate. They're talking about the equipment they have, the services they offer, the features, the markets they serve, blah, blah, blah. But it's all about them.
I would have thought the third one would be a big sticking point, right? Like, the why does it matter? I'm not sure enough people ask themselves, right?
Yeah.
And I always try to ask that almost first. I mean, I understand the order that you're going in terms of like defining the whole deal. But like the why is almost the most important question for me. Like,
Yeah. Sometimes so when I get that sort of blank look, like, I don't know, it all comes down to that conversation of leads, right? We need leads. And it always starts there. We need leads, but really that's not the problem. The problem is they don't know what a real lead is. And here's how I find out. I say, great. If I gave you 100 leads right now, how would you cherry pick the top 10?
Well, let's say they come in with a Glengarry Glen Ross with a bow on it.
Yep. How do you decide which 10? That's where you start. And then I'm like, okay, so if I ask everybody on the exec team which 10, will everybody give me the same answer? Again, if the answer is no, you got to go back to the beginning. If the answer is yes, we've got somewhere to start.
Yeah, and I think that's so important to go through that process, because what I'm seeing people struggle with on the digital embellishment side, specifically with a lot of the boot camps that we're doing, is not everybody is going to be a customer. Not everybody's going to digitally embellish their print. Not everybody needs to. Like, it's not a, like, and we've struggled with this problem. I think you've seen it in print for a long time. New technology just gets haphazardly applied without any real thought around it. We did it with QR codes. For crying out loud, the dumbest thing I ever seen is a QR code on a road sign.
Billboard that's like...
Like, guys, no, that's not the application, right? But in the same way, like, you don't have to digitally embellish every single piece of print. But there are those cases where it's going to be really valuable to do it. And knowing when and when not to is kind of that why, right? It's kind of defining, yeah. Is defining.
It all, again, you asked me way at the beginning, like the stories I tell. So I'm helping the print industry tell their story in a way that matters to their buyer.
Right.
Then I'm talking to the brands and explaining to them why they need to use print to tell their story to their customers. And it's a little bit of the domino effect. The biggest challenge I find is printers sell the way they've been sold to. So
sure.
If they were sold a piece of equipment based on speeds and feeds and output and throughput and whatever, that's what they're going to sell.
Right.
So if they're not being educated on how to take what they've been sold, this embellished digital embellishment press, and then turn that around and now sell the solution that comes out of that, that's where comes in.
Absolutely.
That's where tactical training comes in.
Yep.
It's the same thing. Now, whether it's embellishments or web to print or digital die cutting, it's the same thing. You now have this really cool product, but who cares about this the most?
Yeah.
Who's going to say, wow? And it's not saying I have this cutter. It's I can create intricate snowflakes as your Christmas card and do it in one shot.
It's translating the capabilities into value for a customer.
Telling a story. No, but people want to hear a story. Storytelling is what's in for marketing for the foreseeable future.
It's not that
dry corporate, you know, stuff as many words as you can into a sentence. It's less is more. Keep it simple. Use language that everybody understands, that nobody has to think twice about. And can really figure out very quickly, are you going to be able to help me? Because if you can, then I want to talk to you and I'm going to spend time on your website. But if I don't feel like you can help me in 5 seconds after I get on your website, I'm out. I'm going to find somebody who can.
And then if I don't even feel more deeply about your ability to help me after we have our initial call, then maybe I'm out, right? Or you do something for me. There's a transaction. Like, there's so many steps along the way that you've got to be consistent with that message. But speaking of storytelling, we've done almost 38 minutes of it. And I want to thank you so much. I think this thank might you. Be the record. I know there's going to be certain people, and you're one of them, and Kevin would be one of them, and Warren would be one of them, that just are going to go long because we're talkers. But Joanne, thanks for being on Tuesdays.
Thank you, Eric.
Thank you for sharing your story with me.
Thank you.
I really look forward to, if you guys don't follow Joanne on LinkedIn, you should. She does a lot of stuff where she does hangouts and free education. There's people calling her all the time, so make sure that you connect with her so that you can get a word in edgewise. Thanks for being on the show.
Eric, I'll see you in Canada.
See you in Canada, eh?
Bye, Eric.
Later.
I think something that I'm very proud of is that we have made adjustments and changes as the years have gone on and the industry's changed in several ways. I mean, it starts with our name, which a lot of people may not know, is that we, and you probably don't know, we were the Foil Stamping and Embossing Association. That's what we were for several years.
Oh, because, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so that's really what we concentrated on.